Welcome back to the Workspace Podcast. I am your host, Justin Moran. PJ Antonic is our guest. He is from Oak Development and Design. It's a home renovation company. He buys and renovates homes here in Hingham, Massachusetts. And PJ is what I like to call a hustler. He bootstrapped his business. He tells us a great story on how he did that. He's got some awesome plans for the future. He's actually launching a home improvement television show in January on NESN. So some exciting things coming up for PJ. We had a great conversation. Have a listen. Let us know what you think. Hey, PJ, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, you got it. I'm happy to be here.
I really appreciate it. This is the first time that I found someone on social media, liked what they were doing, sent them a DM, invited them on the podcast, had someone reply, and now you're here.
And I think we did it in like a week.
Yeah, that included a quick trip to Mexico for you.
It did, and a broken foot.
I feel bad for you, man. But your scooter is cool. You're getting around on that thing pretty good.
Yeah, it's good.
So why don't you just share a little bit about yourself? Tell us about yourself and your company and how you got here.
Sure, yeah. My history is very kind of all over the place. I went to school for video television, so I feel like I'm back in my roots here in front of a microphone. You know, after school, I pursued trying to make the national team for rowing for about 8 years, and I raced at the New York Athletic Club. So during that time in my lower and mid-20s, I basically avoided my future, tried to make the national team, never quite made it, got pretty quick, had a good time doing it. And in 2008, I joked that I broke my back, but basically had an injury. And I had to take a year off, and then life gets in the way, and my wife and I moved back to Boston, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. So at that time, I had a bunch of experience selling real estate, and then I also had worked at a premium outdoor shop in Greenwich, Connecticut for a long time, running their business in the high season. And so during that experience, I met a rep, ended up being my Quiksilver rep. And when I moved to Boston, I didn't know what to do, and I ran into him. Apparently, he opened a sneaker store in the South End, and I walked in to buy a pair of shoes. And I recognized him, and we're like, whoa, what's going on? I told him that I was looking for a job, and if he knew of anything in the outdoor industry, like, I'm interested. I was 28 at the time. 6 months later, this guy Jim was like, yeah, I got your name from Dan down at the South End Athletic Club, blah, blah, blah. Do you want a job? Come on in. We need a rep. And I was like, sure. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Okay.
So I take this job, and lo and behold, I thought I had, like, wasted my career 20s. So, like, now I'm 28. Taking a job that most 21-year-olds are taking, not really knowing where it was going to go.
Yeah.
But what I quickly realized is I had so much great life experience and selling real estate and selling outdoor gear and working with reps and all of that kind of like came around and worked really well for my role.
Mm-hmm.
And in a matter of 3 months, I ended up advancing to run their PR, which was a great step. And then I very quickly climbed a ladder, ended up becoming their marketing manager. I was working with, you know, the global marketing manager worldwide. And it just kind of like took off, right? So then from there, I got poached by another local company, a startup sports licensed toys company. I learned a lot about sports licensing, sales and marketing. And I kind of joked that Vibram was my MBA. And then Oyo Sports Toys, which is where I ended up in Acton, Mass. Oyo ended up being kind of my PhD. I was dealing with the NFL. I was dealing with Major League Baseball teams. I was dealing with the Red Sox. I was dealing with all these high profile clients because it was a startup and it was bootstrapped. Like you just got to get out there and sell. And I was doing all the retail marketing. So it was kind of like taking everything in my world and blending it together, right? Toward my third year at Oyo, I had decided that we had a little bit of money, not a lot, about 50 grand. And I was like, you know what, Lizzie, we should take all my experience as a real estate agent and my family background in carpentry and general contracting, and we should flip a house.
What year was this?
This was 2004.
Okay.
And so I basically said, you know what, all these people online and all these people on HGTV can do it. And I feel like I'm just as smart as them. Like, we got to be able to figure this out. Right. So I just kind of had that in the back of my head. And then one day I saw a listing online for a house and I knew immediately. I was like, that's a house.
Okay.
And Lizzie's like, well, you haven't even seen it. I'm like, I'm telling you, I can make money with that house.
Okay.
So I call the listing broker. I was like, I want to come in. I want to look at the house. I get there. It was a short sale. I made an offer. I made it stick somehow. We got it to work. And that was in January of 2014. And for 9 months straight, I did not stop working. I worked Monday through Friday at Oyo in Acton, Mass. And then I would get my Jeep, my four-door Wrangler. I would drive to Hingham at Friday afternoon, sit through traffic, get there. I would drink beers and work Friday night. And then I'd work all day Saturday, all day Sunday, go home, and then hit the reset button and do it again.
Now, were there guys there working during the week while you were at your...
I did everything
you
myself.
You did everything. Wow.
Everything. The only thing I subbed out the roof, and I subbed out some larger carpentry that was up high outside that I didn't really want to deal with. But like, I put a cantilever deck on the second floor off the master. I did that myself. I took walls down, put beams up, the whole nine. Kitchen, all new floors, you name it. I flipped the house, right?
Nice. Okay.
The goal was I wanted to flip the house, but I wanted to do it with some integrity. I wanted to do it a little bit outside of the box. I wanted to think about high quality craftsmanship and materials. Like, mm-hmm. It didn't want to just like go to Home Depot and just pick all the cheapest stuff on the rack.
Yeah, right.
Throw it at the wall, sell it, walk away and not care, right? That's what a lot of people do when they flip houses.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely.
And I didn't even know I was building a business. But if I'm going to flip a house, I'm going to do it right. That was kind of like my mindset. You know, I didn't buy the cheapest kitchen. I actually used a legitimate kitchen designer and bought a decent kitchen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I got a lot of the appliances at discount because they were clearance or whatever, but I still bought nice appliances.
Well, a company starts with a vision and you were developing that along the way.
Correct. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I still am to this day, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. And you just kind of learn from your mistake every day and do better next time, right?
Right.
So that first house on Chestnut Street is sold in a week. It was to date the most money I've made dollar for dollar on a house.
Jeez.
Percentage-wise, if you just look at the hard percentage numbers, it's the most money I've made. It was honestly because I did everything myself. So now fast forward. I decided that working 7 days a week for 9 months straight, that there was no way that was sustainable.
Right.
For my own sake, for my marriage, and most importantly, my wife was pregnant. And so, like, clearly that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
So I stayed at OYO, continued to work there. And then I partnered with my best friend down on the Cape, this guy, Mike London, who is a contractor. I grew up down there.
Okay.
And so I said, Mike, if we can find something down here, I'll bankroll it. I'll do all the back end work, which he hated doing.
Mm.
You just execute it and I'll come down as much as I can to help, but I can't guarantee I can be there. And so we put that deal together conceptually.
Yeah.
And then same thing happened. I asked real estate agents to find me deals. I couldn't really find anything. And then I found a house online and I said, that's it. And I just knew the second I saw it. It's always like that intuition, you know? And as a former real estate agent, you can really kind of like see a lot on a listing and understand like what I'm in for. And so we go down, we look at it, we make a deal, we get it. And the goal was to just keep the walls the way they were and work within our parameters and flip it. Well, it turns out that the house, it was a Sears and Roebuck
kit house. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've heard about these, yeah.
From the 60s.
This old house did one of those a while back.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they were built in the 60s, they were built like absolute dogish.
Okay.
And basically the walls, we learned, were basically framed out of strapping. Because it had been there for a certain amount of time, it registered as historic in the town of Chatham. And their historic committee is tough. And they're like, nope, it was there before 1970. It's historic. The walls are made out of strapping. It actually technically was a gas station in Hingham. And they moved it down there.
Oh my
and then
God.
They added like three weird additions to it. Basically, what ended up happening once we started taking this thing apart, we completely tore it down to the foundation.
Wow.
Except for one wall. Because historic made us keep it.
Wow.
And then we added to that wall. And then we encased it in clappard and new windows. So like really the only thing that's left that's historic, quote, is a couple strapping framing pieces. And
wow.
That's it. So we finished that house. And about halfway through that house, I was miserable at work. I hated my commute. I was unhappy with the direction of the company. I didn't want to be in sales anymore. I wanted to be a marketing guy. And that was kind of the intention when I took the job, but it just wasn't happening because I was selling too much and they saw the value there. And so they didn't want to make me a marketing guy because I was selling. I was bringing money in and it was a startup. So that's what they needed.
Right.
And so I respected that, but it wasn't going to work for me long term. So I was away for a week and my wife FaceTimes me and she's like, you know what you should do when you get home on Monday? I was like, oh, I don't know what. She's like, you should just quit your job. And I was like, Lizzie, that's crazy. That's like financial suicide. We can't do that. So I kind of like dismissed the comment, go back to work on Monday, sit in an hour and a half of traffic to get there. And by the end of the day, I was just like, I can't do this. Tuesday morning, I walked in and I just quit my job. Just literally walked in and quit. And the goal was I would take the summer, finish the house in Chatham, and then I'd go back to work,
okay.
Find another job in sales and marketing or whatever. And so I was looking, couldn't really find anything, but I ended up like basically living in Chatham for the summer building this house, which was awesome. And at the end of the day, the house didn't sell fast. It took a while, which is typical down there. Then that turned into another. And I never really found a job that was appealing. And I was making money. And it was like, well, maybe I should just keep doing this. I mean, my first two houses, I paid off college. I paid off all my credit card debt from when I was a starving athlete. And for the first time in my life, I was completely debt free. And I was like, wow, this is really liberating.
Yeah,
like,
good feeling.
A great feeling. Yeah. You know, I mean, I know people who are my age now and they're still paying off their debt and they don't know when the end is in sight.
Mm.
And so the best advice I keep giving people is like, you got to bite the bullet and do something where you get a chunk of cash and you're going to have to take a risk to do that. I took that risk and I'm a risk taker. If you're involved in real estate, you're a risk taker.
Of course.
I don't care who you are. Back to your original question, you said, you know, how did you get here?
Yeah.
I took a very roundabout road to get to where I am, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but it makes sense for you because it's a good part of your background.
Totally. Yeah. So, you know, my real estate background, my carpentry background, my general contracting background, my sales and corporate marketing experience background kind of all of a sudden now is kind of blended to give me a platform where I can be really successful because I'm using all of those different skill sets. It's been really pretty fun to watch unfold. And I feel fortunate that I've been, you know, able to take this opportunity and do it.
So you've got a development company now. What is it called?
My name is PJ Antonic, and I own Oak Development and Design, based out of Hingham. We develop single-family home properties, and we do some customer renovations, but very limited. We do larger renovations for customers on a very select basis, purely because I just don't want to take the resources off of my jobs. But I buy and renovate properties. I buy and tear down properties, kind of a mix. If there's a margin, I can find a way to make it work.
So you're basically identifying older homes, but then you told me the other day you've got maybe perhaps some greenfield projects in the mix too. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't discriminate. Yeah. I mean, if a project has a margin, then I'll do it. So what I'll do is I'll look at everything I'm given an opportunity to look at. I look at it. So whether it's a quick flip or whether it's a 6-acre marina down on the coast of Buzzards Bay, like I look at it and I evaluate it and I decide, okay, is there a way that I can make money here? Because I kind of approach developing real estate not as I flip houses. I don't just flip houses. First of all, I hate the word flip because everybody gets this negative connotation that it's someone that's going to go in, do a quick job, unload it, and disappear. We like to say we renovate houses. And the reason I say that is like there isn't a house I've done where I haven't gut it for the most part, except for the first one. But for the most part, we gut them to the studs. Everything comes out. We start over. And so when you buy a house from us, you're basically buying a new construction, even though it might be a renovation. But we bring all the framing up to code, all the insulation up to code, all the wiring, all the plumbing, all the HVAC, everything is new. So when you're buying a house from us, not only are you buying a really well-constructed, renovated home, you're also getting a one-year warranty and you're kind of like in the club, so to speak. I had a call yesterday from a house from 3 years ago out of warranty. And the customer called me and said, hey, we're having a problem with our heat. We don't know what to do. It's Sunday. It's 20 degrees out. Like, do you have any suggestions? He wasn't calling me to ask me, can you come fix it? But he was calling to say, like, do you have any suggestions? And I was like, well, listen, I have my HVAC guy on our job down the street tomorrow. Like, I'll just send him by and we'll take a look. And we were there today. And in an hour, it was fixed.
Yeah,
right. Nice. And we didn't charge him for that. We just did it because he's part of the club. I'm not saying we do that for everything, but the timing just worked out. It didn't cost us anything to send our guy over. It was fine. Back to your question about newer projects. So like right now we have a big custom renovation going up that I have pre-sold. That's roughly a 3,600 square foot house. It's a really unique kind of cool blend of old and new, like an old barn that's now going to be a kitchen, stuff like that. Then we have something on Hersey Street that is a much simpler situation where we just basically gut it. We fixed all the framing in the house. It's kind of a weird old antique with a garage attached to it with living space above it. But the ceiling was like 6'8" above the garage. It was really low. So today, this morning, we ripped the roof off it. We're building a whole new roof system that's vaulted to give that room much more head height.
Oh, very good.
And so in about 2 weeks, that place will be ready for new windows, new siding. And so we stayed within our parameter there. Like I didn't do an addition. You know, the house is going to be what it is. It's a 2,200 square foot house. It has its limitations, but it'll be priced under $1 million. And in this town, trying to find something turnkey with a 1-year warranty.
Move in ready.
Move in ready.
Yeah.
for under $1 million.
Forget it.
Forget it, yeah. Right? So yeah. Like, even though it's a flip, it's not really a flip. And we're like hitting that niche kind of just under $1 million price point, right? And then lastly, you know, this spring I have around 5 projects pending. All really exciting different stuff. Like one is a teardown on a new house. One is a quick flip that we might put an addition on. And then we have a potential subdivision coming down the road. So there's like kind of like a total weird mix of things that we have going on.
So tell me about your team. Who works for you? Who works with you? Do you have employees? How does it all work?
Yeah. I mean, again, part of growing, right? Like I started by myself with a 4-door Jeep and my dog and my wife helping me pick finishes. And then that slowly morphed to me having a truck. You know, leaning on Lizzie more and more to help me develop these plans. I started pre-selling houses. So now I'm dealing with customers. And this spring, it got a little out of control. Yeah. So I had a big project on Gardner going up. I had the new house on Hersey that we just did go up. And I also had a big customer renovation going up. And I just got to a point where I threw the white flag up. I was like, I cannot do this anymore. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
did you hire a project manager or something?
So I did. Yeah. This past spring, I hired my first employee.
Okay.
So I have one project manager. At first, we went part-time 1099, and within no time, he was a full-time employee. Just too busy. It was the best move I ever made, especially for my health, stress-wise, brought me back down to where I should be. And so it's just me and my one project manager. And then my stepdad runs my heavy machinery part-time. He's retired, so I kind of use him when I need him. And then I just have a litany of subcontractors that I hire out. So everybody is subcontracted out, and it's worked out really well. I mean, I think eventually I'm going to have to hire a couple guys full-time to do all of the general carpentry stuff because it'll be more cost-effective. But it's all part of growing, right?
Like, absolutely.
You know, establishing an LLC 2 years ago, getting comp insurance. I mean, all that stuff. Like, it's just like, I knew nothing about comp insurance. I knew nothing about LLCs. Right, I knew nothing about any of that stuff. I just kind of like figured it out as I went.
Yeah. Same here. I went down the same road. Yeah.
You know what it is? You got to surround yourself with people who are really much smarter than you.
Absolutely.
And you have to listen to them. You know, hiring the right attorneys, hiring the right accountants, all that type of stuff. My sister is actually my bookkeeper slash accountant, but then I have a CPA to boot just because we want to make sure that we're not missing anything.
So sure.
We go through my CPA for all the real official stuff. So yeah, it's back to your question with what my team is. It's me and one guy. We both are in our pickup trucks, and we just finished our office about a month ago. So we actually have an actual office
there
now.
So very good.
Sit somewhere that's warm and not my pickup truck.
I think one of the more exciting things that you've got going on is TV show. I mean, for what, the last year or something, you've been doing a lot of filming. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I said, I was a TV film major. So I've always kind of had the production in my background. And when I was training as an athlete in New York, I did a bunch of on-camera work. If you are so inclined, you could probably find me on an episode of Ugly Betty. You could probably find me on General Hospital.
No kidding.
I'm definitely standing behind Eva Mendez in We Own the Night. So you could find some funny stuff about me out there. You know, I did it more for extra money when I was training.
Sure.
And, you know, I was in really good shape back then, so I deserved to be on camera. Now I'm just on camera. But again, my background is so kind of oddly shaped, but now it all came full circle. So when I quit my job 4 years ago and went on my own, I was like, you know, I kind of want to be on camera again. I really had fun being on camera. Why not hook up with my agent in Boston again and New York and see if they can book me out? So during that time, I landed a bunch of print work in Boston. iRobot, Shark Ninja. I'm basically the quintessential dad. So like I'm on the box of a vacuum cleaner in Target. I'm the only guy on a vacuum cleaner box in Target. So awesome. Shark Ninja was definitely thinking outside the box there. Yeah, so I kind of decided to pursue on-camera work again. And during the last couple of years, my agent in New York landed me on a couple pilots. One was for a production company producing a home show.
Mm-hmm.
And then one was actually the same situation, but the network had contracted a production company to put together this pilot. On top of that, they actually selected me, which is really rare in the world of entertainment where the network is even involved in picking the talent. So I was super excited.
It's usually the production company that puts something together and then sells it to the network.
Correct.
So this is a little opposite.
This was a little opposite, which made me super pumped. Like, I was excited, went to Connecticut to film for 3 days, and it went terribly. It just didn't go well at all. You could just tell, all of us on set could tell, like, this isn't going to go anywhere. Like, this just isn't working. It just wasn't clicking. I kind of quit. I called my agent in New York and was like, forget it. I'm going to focus on my business and my family. I don't want to be a 40-year-old dude holding on to a dream.
Yeah, right.
So I kind of walked away from it. And then a local producer here in town that produces a bunch of regional shows approached me and said, hey, why don't we do a home show? And I was like, oh, here we go again. Like, great. Yeah, okay. And that was about 10 months ago. And it just kind of happened.
Wow.
So this past spring, we started shooting. We came up with a sizzle reel. We started pitching sponsors. And next thing you know, we had a budget and we had airtime on Nessun.
Wow.
And so I've been treating it as a hobby. I did not take this seriously at all. And in the last 4 months, it has gone from hobby to legitimate revenue stream and legitimate business model.
Awesome.
Which is just unbelievable.
So you've got season one sort of in the can.
Yeah. So it's called Heart of Oak. It's launching January 5th on Nessun, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock. It's a full 13 episode series of half hour shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already shooting season two.
Nice.
And the crazy part is it's just happening.
And it's happening around your jobs, right? It's not like you're going to random jobs to install a window today or something. It's,
no,
it's all around your stuff.
Yeah. So the first season is four jobs and we span over 13 episodes.
Yeah.
The reason that my business never got picked up for HGTV is that they wanted me to do every episode. They wanted to be a different job.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's not going to work. I'm not in Waco, Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, Waco, Texas, you can, because you're paying $30,000 for a house. I'm paying $500,000 and tearing them down. So basically we came up with a new format and we're kind of trying to reinvent the home show, reinvent the format and prove that you don't need one per episode.
Mm-hmm.
The goal was I wanted it to be real life. I wanted it to be about what we really do, who we really are, the people around me. And I didn't want it to be scripted. So actually I have no script.
There's
nothing scripted.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So nothing is scripted. There's no, planning in our days of shooting, really. I mean, I call my producer, my partner in the show. I'll call him, you know, Sunday night and be like, hey, we're ripping a roof off tomorrow. Are you around?
Yeah.
Like today is a good example. We were shooting, taking the roof off today. And he's like, oh man, I'm shooting a commercial for Cam, who is one of our sponsors for season one. I can't get there. And I was like, all right, well, Jer and I will fly the drones. We'll throw time lapses up with the GoPros and we'll just make it work.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I broke my foot, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here with a cast on right now. I can't not film, but it's true reality TV. So I'm filming with crutches.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's really fun because it's organic and it's just happening.
Right.
Like the network isn't telling us what to do. We're not forcing it. We're just creating something that we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll be successful. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean,
without getting ahead of yourself, I'm sure sometimes you sit around thinking about what this could turn into. I mean, you've got an awesome trade, quality work out there, and now you've got this vehicle to bring it to the masses. What other kinds of things are they thinking about?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you one thing I don't want to happen. I don't want everyone to flood me saying, hey, will you renovate my house?
Well, that's going to happen.
Right. That's somebody's business model. That's not my business model. Mm. Right. And I think the one thing I've learned in the last 4 years as a small business owner is you have to pick your niche and you have to be really good at it and you have to get perfect at it. And it's going to take you your whole life to get perfect.
Yeah.
But my goal is to pick my niche and stick with it. I don't want to get scattered. And if I said yes to every renovation that came my way, we would be run ragged.
Yeah.
And my business model is unique in the fact that I own the properties. I make the decisions. Now, I might pre-sell something and have a customer help make some of those decisions, but I'm still bankrolling it most of the time to the end. So I'm in control of the process. Once you're dealing with someone that's living in a house, and you're dealing with real money that they're paying every month to carry it, it's a different dynamic. It's a great dynamic for the right business model, but my business model is not set up for that.
Mm.
So I really try to only take renovations on that are really like unique, interesting, help my portfolio, or somehow helps the broader vision of my business.
Yeah.
Like if you said, hey, would you renovate my kitchen for $50,000? I would say no. Because it's going to take our attention off of everything that's going on in my business.
Mm.
You know, it has to be kind of a unique situation.
Just really, what was the vision for the future?
Yeah. So what I hope is going to happen is that people just recognize our quality of work. And as a result of that, I sell my houses faster and I sell them off market. I would love if I just continue this trend of selling without real estate agents.
I was going to ask that. Do you just sell yourself?
A lot of the time. Yeah. Oh, I mean, a house I recently did on Gardner, we listed and it didn't sell. I took it off the market. I actually thought that house would sell before I listed it, but it was just kind of a funky spot up there and people had trouble envisioning what I was doing. So I waited, finished it, listed it, and it didn't go well. And I took it off the market. And then I ended up selling it off market. I was going to relist it, but it just worked out. And I'll tell that story in a minute. So typically, most of my houses have been pre-sold, people coming direct to me. So they'll reach out to me through my website, through Instagram, and basically say, hey, we're moving into town. We're renting in the shipyard, which I think almost everybody in town has done. Right?
Yeah, it seems to be a trend. I keep hearing that.
So funny. Everybody does that.
Yeah,
we're renting in the shipyard and we love your work. We'd love to work with you. And I'm like, yeah, well, why don't you come out and we'll just rap about it. Figure out what works for you, what doesn't, if this is a good situation. And then we'll meet and be like, well, I have this property over here happening. This is what I'm doing. This is where I think the price point's going to land. And it seems to continue to work. Like it strikes a chord with people.
Yeah.
It might not. It might. I mean, I lose as many deals as I land. And then, you know, I end up pre-selling it. And it's worked out pretty well.
Nice.
Now, am I opposed to listing it? No. But what's important to me is that quality is there. And by not using a real estate agent, I save a ton of money.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't just take that money and stick it in my pocket.
Right.
Like I don't just take it and say, oh, wow, great. Another
There's 50 grand.
Yeah, right?
Right.
I actually end up dumping a large majority of that back in the project so that I can make it that much better. Because for me, I'm making plenty of money. I have my paycheck at the first of every month. And as a small business owner, you probably know this. Like getting to the point where you can draw a consistent paycheck is hard.
It's very hard.
And it's stressful. Well, now I got to like actually like have a pipeline.
Right.
And then you hire someone and you're like, oh, well, now I'm feeding two families, right? So, you know, I have that every month and I don't need more than that.
As long as that's enough, I feel as though that's what you should be drawing.
Correct. And I haven't touched it in a year and I don't plan on touching it. So for the long term, my goal is to not use banks. So I'm trying to just build that investment pot of gold. And also, because I'm comfortable with what I make and I don't need anything more, I'm able to dump more money into those projects to make them that much better and to make my customers that much happier and to make my branding and my identity in the marketplace that much better.
Mm.
And so every single project is getting better and better and better and better. If I have to list it, that's a big number off the top. Back to your question, for the future with the TV show, my real goal is to just like really expose how hard we work, how hard everybody around me works, how good of quality our projects are, and how we're trying to think outside the box. Like we're not just doing the gray shingle spec house. You know, we're really trying to push the envelope and do things a little differently.
And I suspect it's a cool sort of creative outlet for you as well. I mean,
yeah,
you're out there literally swinging a hammer, and to have something on the side, but a prominent project still as that creative outlet, that's got to be satisfying.
It's really satisfying. And what's funny is when I left college, I said, there's no way I'm ever going to go into TV production.
Yeah.
And here I am like going right into it. But it's cool because it's a passive revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really plan on taking money, that much money out of it. I plan on just like dumping it right back into my branding and right back into the show. Just continue to organically build it. I think the thing that I'm so proud about, what's been so exciting is what I've built over the last 4 years. I started with 50 grand, unfortunately, through a family circumstance that somebody had passed away. It wasn't a lot of money, but I've been able to find a way to make it work for us.
Mm.
And it's been really fun to watch, while at the same time using every cent of my paychecks on top of that 50 grand to float what I had to get done. You know, the TV show is just gravy. And if it works out, great. I mean, for the future, where could it lead? Who knows,
right?
Like, could we end up season two selling it nationally? That'd be amazing. Could we come up with a different show idea altogether, which I'm always thinking outside the box. Like I already could tell you, I have one idea in my head that has nothing to do with real estate that I could just host. Now that we have almost like a production company, why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Right. So who knows where it'll go, but you know, for right now, I've got five projects looming in the future that hopefully if all of them close, that'll be what's happening in the immediate 12 to 18 months. Hopefully I pre-sell them.
Cool.
We'll see, but it's been a wild ride.
So you bootstrapped for the most part. I mean, you were lucky enough to get that inheritance and that really greased things a little bit. But what advice do you have for folks that are bootstrapping a business today or about to embark on doing so?
Don't quit your job early.
Yeah. Good call.
You know, you read that all the time in investment books. I think the guy from Rich Dad, Poor Dad said that in that book. Don't quit your job till you're really ready.
Right.
And don't convince yourself you're ready. Looking back now, I probably quit OYO 6 months early because I was a sales guy in the retail business. And I quit in July. I don't know if you realize this, but sales guys in the retail business make all their money in January.
And Christmas, yeah.
Right.
Because they're taking their Christmas checks. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that was just dumb. I should have held on and just muscled through it. With that said, for lifestyle reasons and my family, it was the best move I ever made. Financially, not a very good move. It took me about a year to just feel stable.
right.
after I did that. And God bless my wife, who was so supportive of it, because we had a new baby. Mm. I quit my job and we were sitting on a house for 14 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was brutal.
Yeah, that's tough.
But we
that's
made it tough. Work. Yeah. And so I think my best advice is really like, make sure you're ready to take that leap. Do your due diligence and don't convince yourself that you're ready when you're not. That's really important. You know, I think the only other thing is that there's no substitute for over preparing and overthinking. Like I'm about to publish a blog post about estimating a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody always says, I think it's titled Budgets versus Reality.
There's a big difference.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
And you probably always hear, well, you always go over budget.
Yeah.
Totally not true. You only go over budget if you're not prepared.
Good point. If you don't know what it's going to cost.
If you don't know what it's going to cost. Yeah. Exactly. Like, yeah. don't just like throw some numbers on a piece of paper. And this applies to anything, not yeah. just building houses.
Right.
But you could throw numbers on a piece of paper and hope for the best.
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people do. And I think one of the reasons why we've become successful, and mind you, I'm going to lose eventually. You can't hit home runs every single time. But the reason that we've been able to really make this work is I spend probably 40 hours on my budget. I spend a lot of time on it. I'm picking everyone around me's brain about prices, and I'm calling all my subcontractors and getting rough ballpark. But then also now I have a track record, so I can look back at my records and right. see, well, what did that cost at Hersey Street, or what did yep. that cost at Gardner? What was my square foot number? You know, all that stuff. And I check and balance everything. And
well, you're also taking houses down to the studs, which it makes it a little easier. I mean, if you're doing half of a floor, mm-hmm. you might open up a can of worms that is just a disaster.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the Pondview house in Chatham, we were expecting to keep all the exterior walls.
Yeah, you kept one.
We tore it down to the foundation and started over. We yeah. didn't know that was coming our way. Like yeah, the right. thing on Hersey Street right now, I had a gut feeling that we were going to need a really expensive single air system. Even with us installing it, it's like $45,000.
Jeez.
Right? Yeah. So like, those are the types of things.
That comes with experience.
It comes with experience, but you got to expect it. Like yeah. if you know that might be a possibility, you yeah. need to include it in your budget, right?
Good point.
And you got to make sure that you're thinking of the worst case scenario on everything
mm-hmm.
and build your budget around that. And then make sure you still have a margin. If you don't have a margin, don't say to yourself, well, I think we could make it work. It's not going to happen. You're going to screw up.
Yeah.
So the best advice I can give in my business is spend the time on the budget.
I think that's a broad statement. That applies to everybody.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, you're in the shared office space yeah. business, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not just going to rent a space and outfit it with like a ballpark guess of what it's going to cost you to outfit.
Yeah. No.
Right? Like, yeah. and you're probably going to put a contingency in there to make sure that you're safe. So,
sure.
you know, for me, if the market tanks, which everybody's scared of right now,
yeah.
I'm hopefully set up for success and the fact that I can at least get out without taking a hit. What I'm going to do after that, I have no idea. Maybe I'll take Chris Harrison's job on The Bachelor.
He'll get sick of that eventually.
Yeah.
You know, from the looks of it, you've really embraced social media and you're doing a great job. There's obviously a lot of great content to publish. Whose vision is that? How are you executing it? What tools are you using?
I mean, that's a tough question. It's a beast. Social
yeah.
media is a beast.
And
I think a lot of small business owners kind of get really overwhelmed
yeah.
with it. In fact, you and I talked about
case
it the
in
other
point.
Day.
Yeah, 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 right here.
So for me, I think the biggest thing with social media is it can't be forced. People are smart now.
Yeah.
Everybody's on social media and they get it if you're forcing it, if
yeah.
you're overdoing it, pictures are over polished or whatever. What I found works for me, and by no means am I an expert here, I only have 1,400 followers. It's not that many in the scheme of things,
mm-hmm.
but I'm growing every day and it's working for my business. The thing for me is being authentic, posting shots of me with my kids, posting shots of me on crutches because I just broke my foot. Like, people love seeing that side of you, even though they're watching you for your business as well. For me, being authentic is like number one.
Okay.
Number two is it's really hard to keep up with posting.
It is.
I mean, it's really hard. Some of the guys I follow that do what I do, I aspire to be like them in the sense that they're literally posting 3 times a day. And I don't know how they do it. It's hard enough for me to just like keep up with my business.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind post 3 times a day. But I think in order to be a successful kind of like social media influencer, in order to utilize social media the best, you have to be consistent. Otherwise, algorithms don't pick you up. So I notice for sure when I'm posting 1 or 2 times a day every day, if I do that for 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. all of a sudden my likes and my followers start to jump up.
Hmm.
If I let off the gas at all, for one day, it drops right back off.
Okay.
That's like really important. So I've embraced Instagram and I paired it with Facebook.
Okay.
It's tough because you need to have business accounts on both sides in order for it to work. So that makes things a little tricky. But what I do is I use Instagram as my primary source of content. And then I just link it to Facebook.
Okay.
But then I'll spend some time every couple of days and I'll go on to Facebook on my computer and tag everybody.
Yeah.
And like make sure I'm doing things on Facebook to help the organic traffic. And I will say people are saying Facebook's on the way out. But since we launched the announcement of our show coming out in January,
okay,
we launched that about 2 weeks ago. I started looking at the analytics. Which sounds fancy. It's not hard to do, people. You just click the analytics tab in Facebook and it'll make a lot of sense. And it's crazy. Like 80% of the traffic to our website is coming from Facebook. So clearly Facebook is not going anywhere. For me, social media is a hobby.
Is it you yourself doing it? Or is your wife helping or?
No, it's just me.
Just
so
you, okay.
You can check out my Instagram handle is PJ Antonik, A-N-T-O-N-I-K. I'm keeping it that way. I'm keeping it a personal page instead of going with a company page for the show. And you can check out what we do there. And then we have a Heart of Oak TV page on Facebook. And then we have myself, which I actually think I'm going to make private, my own thing on Facebook. I'm just constantly trying to portray my core values of my business through my imagery. That's kind of my vision is we want to depict quality. We want to depict hardworking people who care about what we do. When I'm taking photos and when I'm posting, that's kind of my inspiration. And it could be a photo of the guys ripping the roof off this morning. It could be a photo of me picking out tile with Lizzie, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm handling all that myself. Now, with that said, the show is a different animal. We have sponsors to make happy. We have statistics to hit so that sponsors will reinvest in us.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually hired a third party social media manager for the show.
Okay, very good.
So you're going to start seeing more and more kind of like posts on my Instagram handle for the show that look a little bit more kind of formal.
Yeah.
And that's because it's funneling through her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my goal is I'm still going to be posting throughout the day
mm-hmm.
and she's just going to be an added source of traffic. And so far it's working pretty well.
That's some pretty solid advice. It's concentrating on being authentic,
mm-hmm.
concentrating on being consistent and really concentrating on taking the core values of your company and trying to make that come through whatever imagery you're posting.
Yeah. It sounds really simple, but
to me,
I don't want to follow someone that looks like he's just faking it.
Yeah.
Again, like we're trying to redo the home show format, I'm trying to take that same mentality to everything I do. I mean, I wake up some mornings like, what am I doing today? I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I have to look at my calendar and like, I have no idea how this business is going to evolve. I just know what my vision is and I trust it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so far it's working. It does not come without a ton of hard work.
Sure.
A ton of money, right? Like you got to spend money to make money.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally true. But you need to spend it wisely and you need to be smart about the decisions you're making. I look at projects and I just know that project is going to make money and I know it. And so every time, doesn't matter, every single time we close, I look at that closing statement. I'm like, this just got real. I've done a lot of houses now. It never goes away. I'm like, oh man, now I got to make this work.
Yep.
And then I start to like double think like, oh wait, did I do the budget right? Am I sure about this? Well, it's too late now. I own it. I'm all of a sudden spending money to carry it. And the same thing also happens once we get up and running. I'm like, oh wait, I did think about that. Oh wait, that budget was right.
Yeah.
Or I'll lose track of the budget for 3 weeks and then I'll go back and be like, oh wow, we're actually under budget. And it's because I've put that work in ahead of time to prepare myself for the worst. And so I almost like under-promise myself and over-deliver to myself. And it's worked out so far.
Nice.
So now I want to just say one more thing about social media. Anybody that thinks they don't need social media for their business, I don't care what it is.
You're smoking it.
You're wrong. You're smoking it.
Definitely.
Whatever you're smoking, I want some. Because I'll tell you this one last story and then we'll all go about our day. And that is the house I told you I had trouble selling. That house came off the market. And I was finishing the third floor, which I had left unfinished for future use, to add square footage to the house. I was also adding a bathtub and something else. And so the goal was to make it worth more money per square foot by adding square foot numbers, or bringing actually the square foot number down by adding square feet to the house to make it look more valuable. And I was going to relist it. And then all of a sudden, I get a direct message on Instagram from a woman from Texas. And she's like, hey, I saw your feed. I love your work. We'd love to talk to you about potentially building us a house. We're being relocated by my husband's work. She was a nurse and was quitting and was going to move up and figure it out once she got up there. So she had time to manage a build. And she was like, you know, is there any way I can meet you? I'm coming in Saturday to sign a lease at no other place.
The shipyard.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Just meet me at Gardner and we'll take a walk through and we'll check it out. We met there. We walked through, showed her the work. And I knew it wasn't her price point. At least the price point that they were striving to hit at the time. I just didn't think about selling it to her because it just didn't seem like the right fit. So I took her for a tour around town and gave her free advice, just kind of like rapped about the business. And then about an hour and a half later came back and I was like, well, listen, we can definitely talk. I have a couple things coming down the pipe, whatever. She's like, well, can I walk through one more time? I was like, sure. She comes out 10 minutes later. She's like, you know, it's kind of unexpected, but the house is perfect. We'll just take this. I was like, what? Did this just happen? She's like, yeah, if you don't mind, I got to get on a flight in 2 hours. So I'm going to go to the shipyard and cancel my lease. And then afterward, we'll be in touch tomorrow and we'll just figure out the details.
Wow.
And I was like, really? She's like, yeah, really. The house is awesome. I love it. And we need a place to live. And I was like, sounds awesome. Yeah. And so for a day, I was like, is this really going to happen or should I list it next week? Sure enough, get a phone call Monday, put the deal together. Done. I sold a house on Instagram.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
And so it really does work.
It does.
Again, it's about she called me because she loved the authenticity of what we do and the detail in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And back to what I said, I focus on with my posting. It totally worked. Hopefully it continues to be that way. By no means are we perfect. We learn every day. We make mistakes every day, but just strive to be a good person and a good boss and hope for the best.
Right on. So one more time, how can people get a hold of you and when is the show launching?
You can check out our website, oakdd.com, and that shows you a bunch of our projects, current and past projects. And then actually on that same website, there's a link to the show website, but it's also heartofoaktv.com. We launch a show January 5th at 10 a.m. on Nesson, and it'll be running for 26 weeks.
Can't wait to see it.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me in. This
My
was
pleasure.
Really fun.
Good. Thanks again.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, once again, that was PJ Antonic of Oak Development and Design. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit that subscribe button, leave a review, and most importantly, share with your friends. The Workspace Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you have any interest in podcasting, please don't hesitate to reach out. I can be found at info@workspacema.com. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you on the next one.